If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
This episode sponsored by IPVanish. IPVanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio and take control of your privacy with IPVanish.
Hey, Tommy, imagine it's 2028 and you're in the market for a new serious off-roader. Imagine the possibilities, because with all of our recent travels and all of our access to the manufacturers, I think we're pretty safe in saying that they're going to be not one, not two, but five. Get that, five brand new Sirius. By Sirius, I mean like lockers, plenty of ground clearance, rolling on 35 off-roaders. And so in this podcast, let's talk about them. And let's talk about what we know. What we don't know.
Yeah, so you want to introduce the five?
Yeah, I'll introduce the five. So I actually got to see the new Xterra.
I know, I've heard.
Yeah, so there is a new Xterra coming. It's been confirmed by the CEO, and I actually got to see it. Now, I can't talk about it, but I can kind of, you know, talk about the things that have been out there. We can show pictures of it. So that's number one. Number two, and this is a little bit on the sad side. You've seen this. You've sat in it, the new Scout.
Yes.
Which keeps getting kicked down the road, and we can talk about what's happening with that, because we know why it was supposed to be out in 2027, and now it's 2028, and maybe even further down the road, but we'll talk about the issues that they're having with bringing that to the market. And then I got to figure, Tommy, not a lot of smoke yet, but you figure that the JL Wrangler is getting old.
Yes.
So there could be a new, or there probably will be a new Wrangler. So what do you think it'll be? JM?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that vehicle is going to be 10 years old in 2028, and they have 10-year product cycles on Wrangler, 2008 to 2018, and then 2018 to 2028. So it's going to be a huge year.
There's more. That's only three.
Okay.
We're not done. You're going to have a lot of choices in 2028. We also know through the grapevine, through keeping our ear to the ground, that there's a new GM Jimny coming out.
That's right.
Maybe even a ZR2 Jimny.
Yeah, exactly right. So that's four.
And now I forgot the fifth one.
Hyundai Boulder.
Yeah, that's right. The new Hyundai Boulder. Thank you. That was just unveiled at the New York Auto Show, and that should be hitting the ground now. Hyundai has said that they're going to bring out a truck first, but we can certainly talk about the Boulder. Timing-wise, it could be around 2028. So there's going to be a lot of great choices when it comes to going off-road. Oh, and a refresh Bronco. Make that six.
Well, they're not refreshing it. It'll probably be all new.
Well, there's a facelift coming.
Because the last news I read was they're not facelifting it.
That really? I heard that there was a facelift coming.
No, the big news was that they were going to keep it going. They weren't going to refresh it. It was selling so well, they didn't see any need to refresh it.
So they're just going to be a whole brand new one.
Yeah, so it would be likely that they would just go to the next generation. But I don't think that would be 28. I think they'd be a little further down the road.
Could be, yeah. That's probably the newest of them. So which one of those do you want to start with?
Well, I mean, I think the big one, the one that we've got the most concrete information on is the Xterra. That's the one that everyone's excited about and talking about. Now, we do have some images both from Nissan and also renderings as to what it could look like. So this was from Nissan. Am I correct in saying that?
Yep.
And this is the front end of the upcoming Xterra. Now, if you're not watching this live, what we're looking at here is a bright yellow concept shot in the rain. It's just the front fascia, and you got this kind of line of lights across the leading edge of the hood with the three marker lights, very similar to, for example, the original Nissan Pathfinder. Then a very slab-sided front end, very angular scoops leading to marker lights down near the headlights, and then a very sculpted out hood with a bit of a power dome in the middle.
Yeah, you've got these like three air intakes in the front, and then you've got these three matching lights that are there to kind of mirror the air intakes. And, you know, I think we have to take a step back before we deep dive into the new Xterra. First and foremost, Nissan, you pulled the rug at the wrong time, and I think people at this point know that. They basically got out of the market, left the market to the Toyota 4Runner just when overlanding and off-roading was becoming red hot. And I think what was happening back then, when you think about the last gen Xterra, was it was very thirsty. It had been kind of long in the tooth, and instead of Nissan like doubling down on it, they decided to pull it from the market, which was, I think at this point, everybody would agree, the wrong decision. And I actually had I asked a question of the new CEO of Nissan. I said, why are you bringing it back now? And his answer was because of the new legislation that basically defangs the new CAFE rules, which allows Nissan to start building body-on-frame trucks, off-roaders, without having to have, you know, more leaves and more Arias, the electric cars, to offset the CAFE number that they would lower by having these big, bold off-roaders.
Do you know why it died in the first place?
I don't know why.
It is because of CAFE. So I was talking to someone on that project who since left Nissan, and he gave me the lowdown as to why they killed the Xterra, but they actually kept the Frontier going. So that generation of truck, right, had two different form factors. It had the pickup and it had the SUV, and they killed, quite famously, the Xterra and kept that Frontier generation for like another 5 years beyond it. And what happened was, I learned, is the CAFE numbers that a manufacturer has to meet is de-incentivize the smaller vehicles and those with shorter wheelbases. Right, and the problem with the Xterra is it had a much shorter wheelbase and a much shorter overall length than the truck. Therefore, it fell in a different CAFE, corporate average fuel economy category or bucket, and therefore it was expected to meet a much higher requirement than it could meet. So they ended up killing that and keeping the truck.
And they didn't have, at the time, of course, too, like a Prius that could offset those numbers.
Well, they
didn't. They had a Leaf, but that was about it, and it wasn't selling very well.
Yes.
This is like 26...
That's
2014. 2014, 2015.
Yeah, I mean, they did have some hybrids. They certainly, in that period, did. They had, of course, the Nissan Leaf, which came out in 2010-11. So they did have some efficient vehicles, but the Xterra and the Frontier were so woefully inefficient, and they were relatively small, that they were really hurting the overall economy numbers. So that was why the decision was made to pull the plug on the Xterra.
And it was especially unfortunate, because there was like an aftermarket that was starting to build around the Xterra. Our local Nissan dealership here was big into that. You could actually start to build it out. And it left the field wide open for basically two vehicles, the 4Runner and the Wrangler.
Yes.
And each of those started selling, you know, 200,000, 300,000 units a year. It was mind-blowing how much people wanted off-roaders, or at least cars capable of going off-road, and there were two vehicles that were competing in that space.
I mean, you have to put yourself back in that era, though. Same era.
We were there.
We were there. Same era as the FJ Cruiser. You got to understand that at that point, the Xterra was a pretty aging platform. I want to say that this generation debuted in 2005, right? And if they killed it in 13, 14, which I think was right around when they killed it, at that point it was going on 8, 9 years old. And there was a community around them. Certainly when it debuted, there was a huge community around the first gen, but it never really picked up steam, I think largely due to lack of marketing that the Wrangler did, that the 4Runner had.
All right, so I'm going to simplify this because I'm sure it's a lot more complicated than this, but in essence, an Xterra is a Frontier without a bed.
Sure, but right? In the same way...
Same powertrain, same suspension, you know, same chassis.
But that's like the same thing. It's like saying a 4Runner is a Tacoma without a bed.
Yeah, it is. But so it wouldn't have been difficult when the new Frontier came out, instead of putting all that money into the Titan, for them to also introduce a new Xterra, which unfortunately they did not. Yeah. And this brings me to the second point.
Definitely.
Now, I was just in Japan at Yokohama, which is Nissan's headquarters. Thank you very much, Nissan, for flying me out there. I had a chance, like I say, to ask the CEO questions, the new CEO. Obviously, they've gone through some CEOs. They've had some challenges, but we don't want to get into that. That's a whole different podcast. But one of the things that they have said is that they are trimming their worldwide product line by a lot. So they're focusing on their core vehicles. The other thing they're doing is they're speeding up the amount of time it takes them to develop a vehicle by about 30%. Mm-hmm. This is what they said. So instead of taking 5 years, it's going to take 3 years. And my question with that is, if that is indeed the case, why is the Xterra not coming until 2028? Well, at this point, they would be the new belle of the ball. People are kind of getting bored of Wranglers and 4Runners and Broncos, and they'd be right at the sweet spot of when the market is looking for something fresh and interesting and different. But in 2028, they're going to be there with 4, 5, 6 other vehicles that are going to be newer, refreshed, competing for your dollars. And that's the part I don't understand, because I went and saw it, and I can't talk about that, what it looked. But what I can tell you is Andre did an AI version of it. So Cole, can you bring up that AI version? He's not far off.
Okay.
That's as much as I could say. He's not far off. So why is it going to take another 2 years for them to bring this to market when there's going to be this plethora of other competitors out there?
Well, it makes sense. Maybe it's not the right call, but it makes sense if you look at what Nissan's doing. So do you know about the next generation Frontier? So what they're doing with the next generation Frontier, once again, I think not officially confirmed, but largely known, is it's not going to be based on the current platform. It's actually going to be developed in partnership with Mitsubishi. So Mitsubishi has a small Ute that they sell around the world, right? And that next generation of truck is going to be co-developed with Nissan. So the next Frontier is going to be an all-new platform. And then in theory, the next Xterra is going to be based on that co-developed platform with Mitsubishi.
So this, I'm going to just take a step. Let me put it this way. Let's go 30,000 feet in the air right now and look down at what's happening in the market in general. What's happening is, because of COVID, because of chip shortages, because of tariffs, the product cycles for development have gotten longer, not shorter. This year, we were supposed to get a new F-150. It looks like that's going to get delayed. And what we're seeing is manufacturers pulling back because they're taking these huge write-offs. They're, of course, blaming electric cars, which is, to me, seems like an easy scapegoat, right?
Sure.
Ford wrote off $19 billion. Honda just wrote off $15 billion. And they're having to then basically batten down the hatches. And instead of coming out with new vehicles and new products, making that product cycle longer, coming out with, like Jeep is doing with the Wrangler, right? They've got 12 for 12. So they've got 12 different, like, they're not models. They're like
trim
sticker
lines.
Packages and trim lines to breathe a little bit of excitement into the Wrangler lineup. And I kind of look at it from top down and I say to myself, the Chinese are shortening product cycles. So they're doing it in 2 years. I mean, incredibly.
Right.
They're building completely new cars in 2 years. And one of the reasons they're doing that is because they do a lot of shared componentry, which our manufacturers don't do. But anyway, to me, it seems like instead of focusing on what they should be doing, which is like, you know, let's kick this into high gear. Let's get this thing out the door. Before it's too little too late, what they're saying is we need to partner with people. The cost of developing these things is too much. And by the time it actually comes out, it's just going to be too late. Either the economy is going to change or there's going to be a new administration and we're going to get different legislation that's going to make these body-on-frame vehicles harder. So like they seem to have forgotten, like, strike when the iron is hot. And right now there's this huge demand for these vehicles. People are especially interested in having kind of active lifestyle vehicles. You can see it with Honda. Honda now has three different trail sport versions, and yet the excitement is there, but the product isn't there. And I would say Rivian has done the same thing, right? Instead of doing the R3, right, the off-roader, they've come out with the R2.
Well, what we're discounting is how unbelievably difficult it is to develop a new car. You know, if you figure a car has well over 1,000 parts in it, and those are 1,000 parts that are manufactured across many different suppliers, it takes an incredible amount of time and resource to develop an all-new vehicle.
Yeah, I would say you'd be right, except for the Chinese somehow manage it. So if the Chinese can do it, why can't Nissan?
Well, I think that certainly there is...
Why can't the legacy brands learn from the Chinese?
There is certainly the cultural aspect of the Chinese automakers. I mean, I think from what I understand, there's this understanding you work 7 days a week and you work 12 hours a day in China, right?
Yeah.
And I think that there's also just a lot less... cost maybe because of labor prices in developing a car in China, right? So it's a different environment than what we're dealing with in kind of the Western world.
Yeah, well, that's all true, right? But what that leads to is no more Nissan or no more GM, because in a free market, in a competitive space, a company that's willing to innovate, work harder, work cheaper, work smarter is a company that's going to win. And so what you're saying is, you know, we're not competitive anymore.
But you also told me something interesting, which I find very intriguing. You were saying that, talking to your journalist buddies, a lot of the vehicles in China are all kind of the same car underneath.
Yeah, so what?
Saves a lot of time, though, Dad.
So there are two. Right? There are three things, really, that make the Chinese successful. Number one, and I didn't know this, is because of the Chinese government, the stuff you don't see in a Chinese car is the same. Like all those Chinese cars that are hybrids, they all have the same 1.5 liter engine. I think it's a Mitsubishi unit, actually. Like the little windshield wiper motors are all the same. So all the stuff you don't see is shared componentry. So when they go to develop a car, they don't have to go to like Bosch and different suppliers and say, hey, we need this part specifically for this car. They're going to use stuff that's off the rack. And so the design is easy to change if you don't have to change the kind of the basic architecture of the parts that are in the car. And so that's one of the things. Number two, cost of building a car is much cheaper in China because of labor costs. You know, one of the things that manufacturers will tell you, it's impossible to build a car in America for under $20,000, because even in right-to-work states, our quality of living, our demands for what our workers want is so much higher than it is in China that you just can't do it. And I think that's absolutely true.
For sure.
And number three, like you said, these guys, you know, are breaking all the rules. They're working super hard, super diligently. I'm not sure that in the West, I don't want to say we've gotten soft, but when you're facing fierce competition, you can't all of a sudden start negotiating contracts, and you know, you have to understand that the rules have changed and you got to play by the new rules.
Yeah, but I think also historically too, I think that this is changing very, very quickly. I'm not saying it is the case now, but certainly a few years back, they also just had a lot less hoops to jump through. You know, their crash test standards were far less than what we experience in Euro NCAP and HTSA, right? So it was perhaps easier also to develop a new model. And I think that's changed a lot in China in the last couple of years, certainly. But perhaps there were also legislative things in effect that made it simpler to develop a car.
Yeah, no, no.
Right.
No.
So I just don't know if they're necessarily comparable. Especially because those cars aren't sold in the U.S.
Yeah, not yet.
This episode sponsored by IPVanish. IPVanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio and take control of your privacy with IPVanish. This episode sponsored by IPVanish. IPVanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio and take control of your privacy with IPVanish.
So
it will be
2012. We were at the Detroit Auto Show,
And
there was a Chinese automaker at the Chinese Auto Show. And I remember in 2012, you told me, "Give it 2 years, these cars will be here." And that was the 2014. It was the same thing. Give it 2 years, and then 16, and then 18, and then 20, then, and then 22.
Back then, those cars were pretty crappy, right?
But they were getting pretty good. But regardless, they were cheap, and they would have sold, right?
Like Coda did it, right? So they were here, and it didn't sell.
But they were expensive.
Well, they were crappy. They were Coda was pretty crappy. They were bad cars. This is from that time that they were in Detroit, like you said, in 2010, 2012. But since then, they have made incredibly. Look, I'm not trying to fanboy the Chinese car industry. They have a lot of advantages. All I'm saying is, you know, it's easy to point to the reasons you can't compete, but all that gets you is being out of business. At some point, the reality of the situation is that I think this administration would probably be happy if, let's say, Chrysler decided that they're only selling one car and they have a factory that's idle right now, just sell that to the Chinese or sell the brand to the Chinese, and it wouldn't be hard for the Chinese to start building cars in America and rebranding Dolphins as Chryslers. I mean, that's a very obvious...
Well, they're already doing it, but it's not going very well.
They're not doing it yet.
The Polestar 4 is a Zeekr.
Yeah,
exactly a Zeekr. It's got actually worse architecture, but it is a Zeekr.
Yeah, but it's not built here. It can be built here. It's not. I mean, there are Chinese factories here already because Volvo is owned by Chinese,
exactly.
And Volvo does have a factory here. But these are up. Once again, you're following. It seems like everybody's following the wrong model, not the Henry Ford model. They're following the Cadillac model when it comes to electric cars. Instead of building a car that everybody can afford, they're building the very expensive car that nobody can afford.
Which makes sense.
Be that Tesla, be that Lucid, be that
Rivian.
But
it's easier to make money selling expensive cars.
Ford made a boat ton of money selling cars to everybody.
But that was a different era.
No, right. I think people are, especially now with the way the economy is going, I think there's a huge opening there to actually start selling affordable cars. That's why right now used cars are having a moment because people can't afford new cars.
I'm not saying they wouldn't sell. I'm just saying from a manufacturer standpoint, the profit margins on $1 million car versus the profit margins on a $20,000 car. It costs arguably more to design and manufacture the small car, but you make a lot more money on the expensive cars.
Okay, but those economics were the same in the 1910s when Ford came out with the Model T.
It was much cheaper to develop cars then, though.
No, I mean, it was the same problem, except that he came out with an innovative thing called the assembly line to make it cheaper, and the Chinese have come with an innovative thing, basically part sharing. So I'm saying, yeah, you could come up with excuses all day long while you can't do it, but at the end of the day, it still leaves you in bankruptcy court. And this is my biggest fear. You can't keep doing business the same way it was done 5 years ago. You got to start to change the way that you're doing it. And what Nissan said was, we're doing that. We're cutting our production time. We're, you know, taking 30% out. We're concentrating on core models. I'm just not sure if that's enough. Like I say, right now, strike when the iron is hot is when the Xterra would sell like hotcakes. You could easily sell, if they had one ready to go out the door today, I would say you could sell 100,000 units like that.
Well, the smart thing that Nissan's doing too, if you check that Car and Driver article here, Cole, they also said that they want to target the price point under $40,000.
Yeah,
which would
smart.
Be massively successful. And this is a quick side profile of what it looks like. So what does Nissan need to do to this Xterra to make it successful?
Oh, yeah, So I can talk about that because I know what they're doing, but I could talk about what they need to do. I think there are a couple things that they first of all need to do. Number one is to make it competitive. Let's use that word. I think they need to have a vehicle that can come out like Ford has done on 35s if you're doing off-roader.
Yep.
So 33s or 32s aren't going to cut it. You're going to
Yeah, I agree. That's kind of the new standard.
Yeah, 35 is a new 33. So you're going to have big tires. You're also going to have some kind of a special shock absorber, I think. So be it King, Fox, whatever, but it's got to be branded and it's got to be different. And they've kind of taken the step toward that already with their partnership with Roush, with the new Frontier.
Sure.
The problem with the Roush Frontier is that there's no more horsepower.
Right.
I'm not saying they need more horsepower in the Xterra. I think there's enough excitement around that without having to add the horsepower.
Now, what folks are saying is the new Xterra is going to have two engines. It's going to have a naturally aspirated V6 and a hybrid V6.
I can't say anything, so.
I don't know what you know, but I think that fundamentally, that's probably a good plan. People do want a very durable, simple car now. That's kind of the route we're leaning toward in 2026, and I think that trend will continue through 28 when it's debuted. So I think it's very smart that it'll have a NAV6 and a hybrid V6 potentially. And I think that what it really needs to have too is that authenticity as to what a four-wheel drive is. So if they basically do a Rogue Rock Creek, it's not going to work, right?
Yeah.
It's got to have a certain level of hardware that makes it a machine people can have genuine adventures in, or at least perceived adventures in.
Yeah, and I think they're already crossed that threshold by saying it's body on frame. So I think you need to have a low range. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of design, one of the greatest things that the old Xterra brought to the table was that stadium seating. So I think they're going to have stadium seating. I think you need more buttons and toggles and less screens.
Yeah, I agree.
I also think you need real door handles. I think you need vents that you can operate with your hands, not with a swipe on the screen. And I think the thing has to be, above all, just honest. I think that's what is at the core of Nissan. There are a couple things that are in Nissan DNA, right? First and foremost is reliability, which they kind of lost when they introduced the CVT, and they kept doubling down on it. That was a JATCO CVT that they did.
JATCO.
Really hurt them. So it has to be reliable. So you're going to have to compete with Toyota. It's going to have to be affordable, because Nissan is an affordable brand. And right now what's happened is that the Koreans have taken that crown away from Nissan, because Nissan was always a Japanese company that had value for money. So affordability, let's call it value for money. And that's going to have some kind of, serious off-road cred. So they're going to have to somehow show, whether it's doing a King of the Hammers version, or I was thinking about this, we just came back from the Easter Jeep Safari. There's a lot of other things you can do outside of, like, one of the things that was always weird to me is that the Bronco kind of stepped on Jeep's party because they were doing all this activation in Moab at the same time the Jeep was celebrating their brand. And it just felt like you're crashing someone else's party. There are a lot of kind of off-roady events, off-roady trails that you could hang the Xterra around that isn't Jeep based. In other words, you don't have to go to Moab. There are other places in the country that provide similar things.
They do have a Nissan off-road event.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's that?
I don't know what it's called, but it is in Moab.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, just get away from Moab. You know how Jeep has a Rubicon Trail. Pick a different trail. Pick a different event and get your customers involved. That's what I'm saying. You have to have some kind of a customer activation.
There it is. It's called Gone Moab. It's the Nissan.
Of course it is.
Yeah. For Nissan truck and SUV.
I don't
owners.
Know if there's any more weekends that are free in Moab.
Yeah.
Between Toyota and Land Rover and Jeep, you kind of filled up the calendar in Moab. So pick someplace else. How about Sedona? Let's make Sedona the capital of the Xterra world.
I mean, but I think it is cool that they all kind of come to Moab on different weekends. I mean, Cruise Moab, you've got Easter Jeep Safari, you've got
it's become a cliche.
The Grenadier Gathering, you've got the Solihull Society does their event in Moab. So, I mean, it's all, like, it is the best place in the world
to build a community, make it reliable, / make it valuable, make it authentic. In other words, make it real, like you said, genuine.
Yeah.
So I think that's what they need to do. I think you like the yellow color?
Yeah.
I think
sure.
The color is good.
That's
I think if you look at the design, Xterra has always had, especially with that stadium seating, has always had kind of a unique shape.
I mean, I think the most important thing they can do is they're going to have to keep it affordable, because the segment is so popular. There's so many great entrants in there that people can buy. If they can keep the price down, which has always been one of the staples of the Xterra, as it has been less expensive than the Wrangler or the Toyota, I think that would be a huge selling point.
How about
well, let's move on
manual.
To
the manual. Does it need a manual
before
we move on?
No.
Can you get a manual on a Frontier?
No.
No. So it probably won't have a manual.
No. I mean, I think that it's a cool thing to feature, but I just don't think that everyone loves the manual and the Tacoma, but I think I was reading that the sales numbers on them are just abysmally tiny.
So let's talk about that for a second before we move on. So I love manuals. I especially love manuals in sports cars, but manuals in off-roaders are problematic.
They are bringing it back, though, in the Gladiator.
Yeah,
can get the Bronco in a manual.
Yeah, you can, but off-road manuals are just not as good as automatics. And you could say the same thing about, like, flappy paddle, dual clutch gearbox is better on track as a manual, because you have less to think about. But the fact is, on road, a manual is more engaging. But the type of manuals that you tend to get in off-roaders are big and clunky and heavy because you need that for off-roading. And so they're not exactly a lot of fun to drive when you're on-road, at least in my mind. And they're certainly not a lot of fun to use off-road because they're problematic.
All right, let's go on to the next one. Okay. I want to kind of talk about the next car. So I want to talk about the newest entrant here, which is very interesting indeed. That's the Hyundai Boulder. So this car was revealed as a concept in New York, but it is hinted that they are going to put this into production. We do know that Hyundai is working on a body-on-frame truck and SUV. This is a body-on-frame SUV. So this car is getting a lot of controversy based on its styling. People are saying it looks a little Bronco-y, looks a little Defender-y.
You know what it looks like? Cole, if you can Google this, I know you've got a bloody nose. I'm sorry, are you okay? Poor Cole's got our producer's got a bloody nose. So can you Google the concept for the Bronco?
It's a 2004 Bronco concept.
Yeah, and this is the thing that people are saying, and they're not wrong.
I think it's more that it's just silver, but there is definitely some.
So that's the Bronco concept. We're looking at a Bronco concept, and if you compare it to the Boulder, they're very similar.
There are elements, but I also think a lot of it is because it's just the same shade of silver.
Well, that very flat front end.
Yeah, I see that. But
the lights, the way that the shape comes down the side, right, the way they make that.
Listen, guys, at the same time, there's only so many ways you can design a box. You know, like if you want a boxy SUV, there's only like a square SUV. Squares typically look all the same because a square is a square. So it's tough to make a square look very different than the other squares.
So let's talk about this. So I hope they've learned the lesson. Hyundai has just announced that they're killing the Santa Cruz, which is their compact pickup truck.
Yeah.
And I hope that they've learned the lesson. And that lesson being that Ford built the compact pickup truck called the Maverick. And if you make a pickup truck, make it trucky, not lifestyle-y. And so if you make this off-roady and not lifestyle-y, then you're going to do better. And what I mean by that is, the problem with the Santa Cruz, which I love, was that it was kind of a surfing kind of California design where if you wanted to show that you were active and you were, you know, youthful and wind in your hair, then you would get this. But in the end, it only sold between what? Like it was like 20 to 30,000 units a year, whereas the Maverick was selling over 100,000 units a year. And that was just basically a very useful utilitarian trucky truck. And so I think the lesson there is if you're going to build an off-roader, make an off-roady and make it, give it a low range, make it body on frame, make it everything we just talked about, the exterior being potentially, as opposed to making it like the Pro 4X, not the Pro 4X, the XRT, right? Where you're taking a vehicle that's basically designed to go on road, and then you're like throwing parts at it to make it look off roady.
Well, certainly with this concept, they have taken your input into mind, because this is a properly American sized and capable looking machine. I mean, if you look at those tires, I think these are 37s, minimum 35 if I remember right. Solid rear axle, body on frame. So it's already, the formula is well beyond what the Santa Cruz or any XRT model has ever been. You look at the design, it looks like they've thought about approach angle, they've thought about departure angle, right? This is a vehicle that if it came to production like this, I think would be a serious contender in the four-wheel drive space. Now, it also looks pretty premium and expensive. People are comparing it to vehicles like the Defender, which I do see some design similarities there as well. But, I mean, as a halo product, I think that this could be monstrously successful for Hyundai if, like you said, they put the steps in place to make sure this is a very capable machine.
So my criticism of this design
37, yeah.
Is that I see a lot of like concept-y vehicle, like the kind of stuff the designers like to build but never get implemented when actually like at those recovery hooks, right? The stuff that looks cool and would be cool to actually include, but because of production cost and because of reality of building a vehicle and because of legislation, you could never build. So this feels to me like a concept that is just that, a concept.
Well,
and that it's going to get severely toned down when it goes into production.
One thing Hyundai is very good at is making the concepts look identical to the production cars.
Sure.
So if it was any other brand, like if it was Subaru, I'd say, yeah, the production version is not going to look anything like this. But Hyundai has a pretty, and Kia especially, like I just was in Milan for Design Week looking at a bunch of Kia concepts.
Uh-huh.
And if you look at the EV9 concept and the EV9 production car, basically identical. So, you know, there's a good shot that if they commit to this, I think it very well could look quite similar to this concept.
Yeah, my issue, Tommy, is if you were to put that vehicle into production, That'd be a 9 mpg off-roader, and that's not going to fly from either a corporate leadership role. They're going to look at it like 9 mpg. That's not going to happen, or especially now, or from
now it could happen. Because there's no legislation on corporate average fuel
economy. No, not with gas at $4 or $5 a gallon.
Oh, people are still buying. The high end of the market is still buying gas guzzlers.
But I'm saying that's not a Bentley or a Rolls Royce. Those people do care about the MPG. And yeah, once you get to the trail, it'll kill. But getting there will, suck your wallet dry. And so I think you're going to have to make it more realistic. And I'm not sure Jeep tried it, right? Jeep tried to go and build a Wrangler that was $120,000 when the 392 first came out with the AEV version. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And didn't fly. It just there's a ceiling there. And I think Hummer tried it with the EV. It also didn't fly. Right now, the Hummer EVs are sitting on lots.
That's because it's electric, though. That's not because it's.
I think it's also because it's too expensive. I think that there's a ceiling. But they can't keep luxury off-roaders.
They can't keep G-Wagons on the lot.
But the G-Wagon is its own thing.
And Range Rovers are selling really well too. Full-size Range Rovers.
Those don't go off-road.
But they are off-roaders fundamentally. They have a low range. They wouldn't have
once
a low
upon
range.
A time they were.
Yeah, but no one takes G-Wagons off-road.
This thing is not a G-Wagon.
No, it's not.
You're not going to sell a G-Wagon at a Hyundai dealership.
Yeah, that is the biggest issue with this. You're exactly right about that. But I do think that, look, if they make this a legit four-wheel drive, there is a market for it, even if it is quite big and unfuel efficient. Mm. Let's go to the comment section really quick, Cole. So if you want to follow us live, patreon.com/TFLcar. We do these live streams a couple times a week, and you can leave your comments, and we'll read them live on air.
Can I do a little plug for your Carish, Tommy?
Yes.
Carish, after a long hiatus, is back.
That's right.
Every 2 weeks. Uh-huh. And so Tommy, Jen, and Case are back having fun with cars. So if you aren't into all this kind of deep dive, in the weeds kind of stuff, and you just want to have fun with cars, that's a really great podcast, and it's on the same YouTube channel as this.
So Jason Lee says, hello, Roman and Tommy. When are you picking up your Discovery One? That's what we were just talking about yesterday. I need to get my ass in gear.
Yes,
and
I asked,
get over there.
Every week I ask Tommy, when are we going to get that back? And yes. Every week he gives me some excuse. So I've completely given up on it.
I've been.
Thank you for reminding me.
I've just been so busy, though. It's been a tough month, April.
Dude, just call a shipper.
No, but I want to go out there and actually spend the weekend with my guy. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Tad says, every manufacturer needs to develop a body-on-frame SUV. While it takes a huge amount of effort to develop a car, Chinese don't pay attention to regulatory burdens or labor laws. Market trend for those vehicles was self-evident over a decade ago.
First of all, that's not true. Because they're building cars in Europe, and the Europeans are very strict when it comes to labor laws and regulatory issues.
They're building cars for Europe.
But they're building them in Europe.
Are they
as
building
well.
Them
yes,
in Europe?
Okay. Yes, they're building factories in Europe. So hold your horses there. And even if those cars are built in China, they still have to meet European standards. So Eurocap, whatever heck Euro is on. Uh-huh. So you can't just be like, hey, we're not going to have it crash tested. We're just going to start selling them in Europe. So I just, as a journalist, I just need to like fact check you pretty hard on that. Sure, maybe the cars that are sold in China don't meet the same regulations that we have in America or we have in Europe, but the cars that are built in Europe or sold in Europe have to meet those regulations. Yeah, and you're right. There was just a big story where the Chinese BYD started building cars in Brazil, and they used a subcontractor. This was a big story to build the factory, and basically they imported Chinese labor that were treated like slaves, allegedly, and they just lived and worked 24/7 to build that factory out, and the Brazilian government turned the other way. So yes, there are things like that happen. But in general, if you're going to sell a car in America or in Europe, you have to have that car meet our regulatory. And if you, whether you agree or disagree with that, that's a whole other conversation.
Elliot says agree with Tommy that it's a similar color. So yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the designers love silver. If they had painted that thing red, I think a lot of people wouldn't have made that comparison to the 04 Bronco concept. But I'm really hopeful for that Boulder. I think it's going to be really cool. Do you want to go to the next car?
Yeah, let's go.
So the Scout is another vehicle that we know. What?
Oh, God, the Scout. I love it so much. I love it, love it, love it. I think the concept of it, the one that you walk through, the one that we've seen is such a – we have a reservation for one. I love the fact that it's a range extender because they're having their moment right now. But yet, the fundamental, I think, mistake that they made was they wanted to keep the frunk, and in doing so, instead of putting the range extender under the hood where it probably should be, they stuck it under the bed, and that creates all kinds of engineering problems, specifically having a vehicle that can tow. Because what ends up happening is when you put, you know, it's going to be a corporate Volkswagen four-cylinder, right? When you put that under the bed, you severely limit how much the vehicle can tow because you limit payload and you limit tongue weight.
I don't think that's true. I mean,
that is exactly true.
But the weight is weight, whether it's in the front or the back.
No, it's in the back. You can't put it behind the rear axle. I had a long conversation with our friend Sam, who's an engineer. This is absolutely true. It limits tongue weight, and what you end up doing then is you end up severely limiting the amount of towing. And the problem is that the Scout is a big vehicle. You saw it. I haven't been next to it. You saw it. This thing's like F-150 size.
But they I think they announced the towing already. It's pretty big. Can I see your phone? I'm pretty sure they did. I think it's 10K.
No, it's not. They haven't. They're hedging and hawing about that. And what they're also hedging and hawing is about when it can be available. So I think they announced towing at 5,000, and a vehicle that's the same size and potentially the same market as an F-150 can tow 5,000 pounds compared to an F-150 that tows at least 10,000, if not more.
I don't think it really matters. Okay. I mean, this is an electric. First and foremost, it's an electric vehicle. I don't think people are buying this to really tow.
Well, that's the reason you've got the range extender, so that you can tow.
It can go on road trips and off-road. I mean, this is an adventure vehicle.
I think you're wrong there, Tommy.
This thing's going to be very expensive. It's going to be quite luxurious. And I think there will be a small percentage of people that tow with it. I just don't think it's going to be big.
I mean, the reason that 95% of the reservations were not for the electric vehicle but were for the range extender is because...
People hate electric cars in the U.S.
Not because people hate electric cars.
That's the real reason.
No, the reason is because you can have your cake and eat it too. You can tow across country.
I'm pretty sure you can just
fill it up with gas.
They didn't announce towing targets?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes. I'm positive, Tommy.
Interesting. I actually think it's very smart for a range extender to not have the engine in the front. I think that's a really smart decision because the advantage of a range extender is, in theory, you can get away with a much smaller engine, and therefore you don't have to put it in a massive cargo area. Right, you can get away with putting it underneath the bed floor, underneath the storage floor. So if they can pull it off, I think it's going to be a really brilliant piece of packaging.
Well, apparently they're not pulling it off because they've now pretty much confirmed that it's going to be – at first it was 1 year, and now they're saying 2 years delayed. And some people were speculating because there's a story that came out in Germany, and I think is it Der Bild?
Yes, but then they
– And then basically Scott Kehoe, who's the CEO who came from Audi, kind of hedged and hawed when there was a press day, and now it's pretty much been confirmed that we're looking at least 2028, if not 2029, because they're having a really hard time engineering that engine. At least that's speculation. And they're hiring people. They're building out a factory in one of the Carolinas. I don't know if it's North or South Carolina, but they're really struggling with getting this thing to market.
I think
the speculation from engineers is just because of that decision.
Interesting. I mean, look, mid-rear engine cars are not hard to do. We've done them for the past 100 years.
But it's a truck.
Right. Yeah, but even that's been done. I mean, we did it in the
60s. Name a successful truck that's been rear-engined.
Well, I mean...
the only one I can think of is the... what's the GM? They did a little truck.
Corvair.
Is a Corvair. That's the only one that I can think of where they stuck the engine in the back. And that was anything but successful.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not an impossible hurdle to do. And I think ultimately to make a vehicle like this interesting, you have to take these bold steps, right? You can't just do the same thing.
I'm not opposed to bold steps, but if those bold steps mean you're 2 years behind...
Sure.
When the vehicle is going to get built, that's going to cause a lot of issue. And it's not just the timing of the thing. It's also the expense of it. You're also spending a lot of time engineering something when you're not actually selling anything.
From what I've heard, the reason it's more delayed is largely due to budget issues. The Volkswagen Auto Group is not doing as well as it has in the past.
Well, nobody's doing as well as they have in the past.
Well, right, Kia just had their best year ever.
Except for the Koreans.
Yeah, but and I think that the budget issues mean that they have to put more time and resources toward other potentially more profitable short-term projects, and therefore Scout's getting pushed off. But whatever the issue, I mean, look, it's like 2 years seems like a long time in our world, but in the grand scheme of the automotive space, it's not really that much time.
No, in the grand scheme of the old automotive space, it isn't that much time. But in a time when the ground is shifting underneath you, it's a huge amount of time. And What you can't be doing, especially these days, is because I think what ended up happening is you've got the Tesla effect, where people are no longer there's a couple things that happen. Let's go fly above ground again. Let's go 30,000 feet in the air. First, Tesla came out and promised a lot and didn't deliver a lot. And so in the past, when companies promised stuff, most journalists and most I think consumers believed them. I mean, look at the Roadster.
Sure.
Right? That's been promised now for 7 years. And so I think there's now this natural, skepticism when it comes to any company promising anything, because you're like, I don't believe it until I actually see it. I don't believe it. And so the excitement...
That's always been the case with Tesla.
Yeah. But the problem with that is that because of the internet, when you roll out a product and there's a lot of buzz around it, and I'll give you an example of that. And the Volkswagen Group is the one that really put their foot in their mouth on this one, the ID Buzz.
Right.
They rolled that thing out like 6 years ago. There was so much excitement. And by the time the vehicle actually came to market, there was no more buzz around the buzz, right? The moment had passed.
Yeah.
Nobody cared about it, and the thing just flopped on its face. And it cost them, I'm going to say millions, if not tens of hundreds of millions of dollars, because they waited and took too long to bring that to market. The moment was gone.
Right,
and
I agree.
And instead of having a successful vehicle, they ended up with a flop that they're no longer actually importing because they've got too many in the ground that they can't sell right now. And that's my fear for the Scout. I think Scout at this point is heading down that exact same road.
I mean,
when you went to that program, there was so much excitement around it. And now every time Scott Keogh gets up there and says, well, it looks like we're having trouble, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't matter the reason. The timing is gone and the excitement is gone. And by the time the thing comes out, and it's going to come out as always more expensive. This is another thing that's happened, right?
Sure.
Cybertruck was supposed to come out at, what, $39,000, came out at $120,000
yeah.
for the Cyber Beast. The F-150 Lightning was supposed to come out at $29,000 or $39,000, that held for like 2.5 weeks, and then it went to $80,000. And I think people are jaded and they don't trust it, and it's just a recipe for creating a flop.
I mean, it's not fair to say it went to $80,000.
Yeah, it did.
It
that's
went
how
from
much ours
like,
was.
Yes, but that's because we got a fully loaded Lariat. It went from like $39,900 to like $47,000. Just to be fair, it went up a lot, but not by double.
That's for the small battery, which is not going to fly to begin with. That was 150 miles of range.
That was
the
starting point with 40, and then it went to 47. I think that, listen, it's like I agree with you that there is a danger that you reveal, especially when you reveal a car too early. But there's also precedent to say that delayed cars can be the most successful cars in the world.
Okay, give me an example.
Model 3. Model 3 was, if you recall, was delayed and it was delayed and it was delayed and it was delayed. And then it was a massive hit regardless. Same thing with the Model Y. Massive hit, right? Model Y now the best-selling car, I think, in the world, isn't it, globally?
Yeah, but those cars had that feel to themselves. There were no competitors. And that's a whole different ball
game
than if you have a crowded market where you have players like the Chinese coming in and already building these cars. They already exist.
Model Y still had a competitive market.
What was competing with the Model Y?
ID4 was out. Mustang Mach-E was out. Right, these were cars that were all on the market. It's not fair to say it had it all to itself.
No,
like it was.
Let me push back on this. At some point, Tesla almost, like Kleenex, Tesla almost became a word for electric cars. The ID4 certainly wasn't a word for an electric car. But if you said Tesla at the time.
But that's because they made a fantastic product, right? And I think if Scout builds a fantastic product, it will be a huge success.
They pioneered an entire new way of power. Well, it wasn't new, but a new, for this decade, way or last decade of powering cars. And Scout's not doing that.
I think that they have a good shot of being very successful.
I'm just saying, right now it feels like it's going down the ID Buzz route. So I wish them well. I love the thing. I want to buy one. Take my money, guys. But for God's sakes, don't wait till 2030 to bring this out, because by that point the excitement will be gone and the times will have changed and it's not going to be successful.
I think it will be.
Okay.
I think that they.
I hope you're right.
Yeah,
I hope you're right.
Because
I'm rooting for them.
There's still so much interest around Scout,
even though we're
a couple years out from the reveal.
The problem becomes, right, there's a lot of interest, but then the new Xterra hits and somebody says, you know what, I'm tired of waiting for my Scout. I'm just going to go buy an Xterra.
Yeah, there'll be some of that. Yeah. For sure. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so the last two vehicles we really need to discuss. Honorable mention, by the way, to the Mitsubishi Montero, which was caught testing a while back. I think that could be potentially very cool. The GM Jimny and the Wrangler JM. So these are the two vehicles we by far know the least about. These are mostly just rumored models. Although I think that it was Automotive News that announced the GM is bringing back the Jimny. So that's very cool.
So this is very hush-hush inside the companies. We've got an AI version right here. Obviously, I think for all car enthusiasts, the issue is that GM came out with a Blazer that wasn't really a Blazer, if you know what I mean.
Right. It was a different thing altogether. The Jimny, though, could potentially be their answer. Another iconic off-road nameplate that died many decades ago. It's back, though, potentially as a body-on-frame four-wheel drive.
If anybody can build a body-on-frame, it's GM.
Well, they do currently, yeah, which is the confusing part. You know, they have got the ZR2, Canyon, and Colorado, which are some of the best four-wheel drive trucks in the world.
But they have no competitor to a Wrangler or a Bronco.
No, they don't. And that's why the people are thinking that the Jimny might make that return
Does it need to be a convertible?
No.
No?
Foreigner's not a convertible, and it's hugely successful. I think it'd be cool if it was, but I don't
think
it has
to be. How about the Blazer, where you could take the whole top off?
Yeah, but you could do that with the old Forerunner.
But there's something about like being able to take the top off, right, and seeing people zipping around with the dog in the back, you know, the golden retriever in the back and the surfboard thrown in, that just kind of lends a little bit of like visual punch and a little bit of lustworthiness
to
a car.
Yes, it's cool, but I don't think it's necessary.
Okay.
I mean, Toyota has proven with now the hugely successful Land Cruiser and current Gen 4Runner.
Yes, but
I'm
such a grumpy old man.
Yes,
today.
You are.
I'm sorry.
You really think they would sell more if you could take the top off?
No, but the problem is, and I'm very realistic, and I don't think I'm pessimistic. I think I'm just skeptical.
That's pretty pessimistic.
The problem is that Toyota is selling based on their reputation for reliability, and GM has a lot of things, but their reputation for reliability wouldn't be number one in my list of things that they have going for them.
Yeah, I just think it's, you know, we talked about earlier how hard and expensive it is to build a vehicle.
Uh-huh.
You want to talk about developing a vehicle that is expensive and takes a long time to develop? An open top four-wheel drive. I had a really fascinating conversation with an engineer once.
My gut tells me, Tommy, that these companies are just building stuff that people don't want and ignoring stuff that it's like obvious, like these giant neon signs.
Yes, but I'm trying to
make the Blazer an off-roader, and they turned it into this like mommy mobile.
I know. That was a weird call. GM does that sometimes. But I want to talk about a really interesting conversation I had with a very senior engineer at a major OEM.
All right, let's hear it.
And I asked him, because he used to develop, before he became kind of C-suite, he used to develop the actual door mechanism, hinges, and openings to modern SUVs. And he asked me, he said, what do you think is harder to develop, a new engine or a door opening?
I would say engine.
Yeah, of course engine. And he's like, no. Engines are pretty straightforward. Like the playbook on how to develop an engine is there. He said door openings, any moving panel that you need to be able to seal for the life of the vehicle is incredibly complicated. The way that you're actually able to integrate the hinge into the vehicle, the structure around the door opening for rollover and safety, and then the actual seals themselves to be able to make function after many, many years of that panel opening and closing is unbelievably difficult, he said.
This is something that AI can fix, maybe? I'm just guessing.
No, but he just said, and imagine that. That's for a door. Now, amplify that up for an actual top that comes off, right? Or panels that are removable. Very, very difficult.
Here's what I would say to that. I think in the olden times, it was hard to make a door that sealed well. But I was just in Japan driving around the middle of Tokyo with Nissan's new ProPilot, which is, they're saying, this AI-driven automated system that incorporates everything that Tesla does, plus it has LiDAR, plus it has radar. So they're doing, you know, redundancies that you like. And to me, especially in these like six-way intersections with scooters and pedestrians and motorcycles and trucks and cars and construction, that to me is a much more difficult nut to crack than how you open and close a door on any vehicle.
Well, that's a different can of worms, though. We weren't talking about AI technology. We were talking about the mechanics of a door versus the mechanics of an engine.
I'm just saying that to me, and yet they're cracking it. So I think that I'm not that motivated by this guy's, you know, tale of woe on how hard it is to make a door.
I mean, I wouldn't be either, except he was very senior in a very well-established automaker. So I think that he did have a certain level of credibility in explaining that. I just don't think it needs to be a convertible.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it might need to be a convertible if you're going to capture the imagination of the buyer, especially with all this competition. Okay, how about we still haven't talked about the Wrangler or the Bronco, which we know very little about. So we can talk about what Wrangler is doing now, which is their 12 of 12. Every month they're coming out with a new trim line. But you got to figure they're working furiously, hoping to bring out a new. So what in your mind will the new JLM look like?
JM.
What's going to make? There's a rewind. They just announced that.
I mean, I think the direction that Jeep has been going in, and this vehicle is likely done actually at this point. If it is indeed a 28 model year, I'm sure that the hard points in the design has been well established.
So let's talk about what they've tried that didn't work. They tried hybrid 4xe. They pulled the plug on that,
which I would argue, given the time it came out, was a big success. That did lead to a lot of sales. I think ultimately
a lot of reliability issues.
Yeah, we will look back at it as kind of a challenging period for them in terms of quality, but it did sell a lot of cars. So
is the new one going to be a hybrid? I guess
somebody yes, asked. Almost certainly.
Okay, so it's going to be electrified.
Probably not a plug-in hybrid, but I would be very surprised if it wasn't a normal hybrid like the Cherokee.
Okay. They tried electric, and that's coming out as a new Recon, of course.
Yes.
So that's not going to be a Wrangler. I don't think a Wrangler is going to be – there's going to be some kind of internal combustion engine in the thing. So is it going to be – so one of the things I got to do – this is kind of cool, Tommy. One of the things I got to do – and the technology is moving so fast on this in Japan – is I got to drive the new Rogue, the 2027 Rogue Hybrid. And unlike any other hybrid, it's like the best way I could describe it is it's like an Amtrak.
It's a serial hybrid.
Yeah, series.
Series, sorry. Yeah,
yeah, hybrid. In other words, there's no connection from the internal combustion engine to the wheels. So the only thing the internal combustion engine does is it charges the battery, which then powers an electric motor, which then spins the wheels.
Which is how a lot of people think that the Volts work, but the Volts didn't always work like that. There was a direct clutch lockup that could happen between the engine and the wheels.
Because series hybrids are really efficient in the city.
And very inefficient in the highway.
And the way the GM got around that in the Volt was they actually put a drive shaft from the engine to the wheels so that when it was on the highway, it could power its...
Direct drive.
Yeah, direct drive. And then, of course, if you look at like the new Honda that I just drove the new Honda CR-V Trail Sport, and the Civic does this as well, and they've got this really direct drive system where they've got two electric motors, and sometimes it works like a series hybrid, and sometimes it works like a parallel hybrid.
Two motor.
Yeah, it switches and kind of gets the best of both worlds, so it really doesn't even have a transmission. And so the technology is moving very rapidly, and the question is, how does like that Honda system, which is both a series and a parallel hybrid being that the electric motor and the gas engine power the wheels at the same time, how does that translate into an off-roader? And how does Jeep incorporate some of that? Because the 4xe was a traditional, like almost like a Prius-like hybrid, if I recall. It was more of a parallel hybrid. It wasn't a series hybrid, as far as I'm aware.
You're vastly overcomplicating it here, Dan. Yeah, they're just going to take the smallest engine, probably the new 2-liter Hurricane.
Which is what they're doing now.
They'll put a motor between the engine and the transmission, and then they'll put a small 1 kilowatt-hour battery underneath the seat. I think given how popular Jeep is, they're not going to do some weird series parallel thing. They're just going to do a very standard hybrid setup.
How about a range extender?
Very unlikely. Very unlikely. Okay. I just think that that model is so important to their lineup, and they already have the Recon.
Just 382 everything.
Yeah, they could do that too. But they already have the Recon. Yeah. For those people that want the cutting edge technology, I think that we're going to see largely a pretty conventional hybrid system in the new Wrangler. I think it will probably retain body on frame. I will be very surprised if it retains solid front axle. I don't think it will. So I think that likely we're going to see independent front suspension, which is going to make everybody really mad. But I think for their new road going targets, likely it will be independent front suspension. Likely the windshield will not fold down because nobody does that. But likely the doors and the roof will still come off.
I hope I hope you're right, but I got a feeling like there's so much great new technology. Why not take advantage of it? So
because you, they do. That's the Recon. The Recon is
just pure electric. Yeah, but there's not a lot of technology.
And that's
going
already
there.
Gotten so much pushback from people. I think that the Recon is the Jeep for people if you want that full kind of techie experience, and the Wrangler will be more conventional.
How about something clever like the Corvette ZR1 where you power the...
No, they're not going to do that.
Where you power the front wheels with an electric motor, but the rear wheels with the internal combustion engine.
No, it's just...
And then you can decouple that, and on the highway, you get the best of both worlds. No. You get good. So when you're driving the Moab, you know, you're not using as much gas because you're not spinning all four wheels, and when you need all four wheels, you just bring in the electric motors.
Wrangler people are almost as bad as Land Cruiser people, where they hate change, right? They hate change.
That's you.
Yes, that's why I like Wranglers, because they
1942 there.
They never change, right? People who buy Wranglers, I think a lot of the hardcore community doesn't want that much change, right? So I think it's going to be a more deliberate kind of focus on evolution. Wrangler has never revolutionized anything.
Okay.
Look at the formula today is pretty much...
Is the windshield still going to come down?
No, we talked about that. Just no way.
Okay.
Because that's a pain in the ass to engineer. No
you
one
just
does
did
it.
That. You just did a video.
This is very popular. You said it wouldn't be popular.
No, I said that Andre's video wouldn't be very popular, unfortunately. Oh. It isn't. Where he decided to see what the fuel economy is.
That's true.
With the doors and the roof on versus doors. It's a great video. Go watch it. It's on all... Here. Here, I've worn this just all TFL if you're watching, alltfl.com. Check it out. Him and Jen had a great time, but the number difference was surprising. I'm not going to tell you what it was. I'm going to force you to watch the video.
Yeah, because no one else is watching it.
So go check it out. It's a fun video.
It is a very good video. He did a really good job.
It's the worst kinds of videos where it's fun and it's entertaining, but because people are used to having like serious testing, it's not going to do well in terms of views.
Yep. So I think that it's going to be a very... mild evolution in terms of powertrain. I think that they will go independent suspension because Ford has proven with the Bronco you can be 97% as capable for most people and still be able to accomplish the off-road targets and on-road targets.
All right, so let's talk about the Bronco.
Well, Jason Lee asked an interesting question on Patreon. Do you think the new Wrangler GM will still have a manual transmission?
Yes.
No.
There you go.
Why
is your answer?
You really think so? No one buys manuals.
I think they'll have a manual.
Wow.
Yeah,
I don't think they will.
Especially
if it's standard hybrid. How would they do that?
Well, it's like I think they're going to have to. You said it. The people who buy Wranglers are the most conservative. They're like the people who buy Mopar Hellcats and the Hemis. These are the last people who were going to be on the electrification train.
Yeah.
So they're also going to be the same people
so
who value manuals.
They're going to go for a manual and also a split hybrid setup where the front axle is driven by an electric motor.
We don't
motor.
Know anything about what's going on. I'm just throwing stuff out there. I'm sure this is a meeting they've already had at some point.
This thing is done. This thing was developed 2 years ago. It is.
It better be done.
Yeah. This thing's all done by now. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go on to the Bronco. So I think Ford could certainly EcoBoost a Bronco.
Well, they have.
No, I mean like hybridized EcoBoost.
So that's been announced already.
Okay.
So
there you go. I'm ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
or way behind.
Basically, the CEO went on a podcast and said that the entire lineup will be electrified. That means Broncos.
Hey, can I tell you a story?
Okay, finish what I was going to say, and then you tell me a story.
Yeah.
So the CEO went on a podcast and said basically the whole lineup will be electrified. Whole lineup means that Bronco's in there. So it's largely now known that the Bronco will be hybrid. Okay, what's your story?
At Sam's Club, because it's cheaper gas,
uh-huh.
Filling up, and I noticed that this like ratty Toyota Previa, remember those things?
Yeah, yeah.
Comes pulling up behind me where the engine was, that's also was hard to do.
Mid-engine, yeah.
Mid-engine, yeah. It was really ratty, but it's a Previa, so I immediately take notice. And this woman comes out of it, and she looks like she's been up all night. So I was already a little like suspect.
Uh-huh.
Not the sharpest tool in the drawer. At least not the way she looked. She starts filling up her vehicle, and I'm fine. That's great. And the next thing you know, she lights up a cigarette.
Yeah, it's bold.
And she starts smoking as she's filling up her gas tank. And I look around. I'm like, is anybody else seeing this? Like, there's a little attendant there, right?
Yeah.
He's in a little booth. And I'm like, this is freaking dangerous. Because, as you know, what combusts is not the gas itself. It's the fumes.
It's the vapors.
It's the vapors, which are coming out of the exhaust pipe as she's, enjoying a cigarette. So I go up to her and I go, don't do that. It's crazy dangerous. And she kind of looks at me. And then she kind of begrudgingly puts out the cigarette. and gets in her car and leaves.
Yeah.
And then the attendant comes by and he said, thank you for telling her that I'm not allowed to do that.
Right.
And I said, what do you mean you're not allowed to do that? He goes, my boss doesn't want me telling customers what to do. And I was thinking to myself, well, this is one customer who doesn't want to fill up at a gas station where there's people smoking because I don't want to die.
So, I think that attendant was probably wrong about that.
No, he was very serious about that. He was like, my boss doesn't
That's a crazy move.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing you said something because you may not have made it to this podcast.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. I'm like, come on. This is just common sense. Don't be smoking and, you know, filling up your car.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's an hour.
Yeah. We didn't talk about the Bronco.
But we don't know anything about the Bronco.
Well, we can speculate. That's the fun
Bronco's
part.
The Bronco's not going away until 2031.
Is it
going
to be a hybrid?
Yes. We already talked about that.
Yeah.
There's nothing that, I mean, it's the newest car.
A plug-in hybrid?
I don't know, Dad. I just think that like.
A range extended hybrid?
It's just not going to happen by 2028, right? The Bronco came out 6 years ago. It's likely on a 10-year product cycle. So I think that we're going to talk about that like at 2030, but it's not going to happen in the near future. So I think that
I think they're in trouble if it doesn't, because everybody who's wanted a Bronco has bought one for
The sales numbers would say otherwise. The sales numbers are incredible on Bronco, and it's 6 years old now. So like it's still selling really well. Dad, the Wrangler is 10 years old and it still outsells the Bronco. 200,000 people are buying Wranglers every year, and that really hasn't changed that much since 2018. So I think that likely it will be unchanged.
So you're saying they're going to sit on their hands
and just
keep cranking out the same old Bronco.
They'll put a hybrid in it. They'll probably start doing what Jeep does, where they'll come out with some interesting trims. But the fundamental...
You know what the big trend is, which they should jump on?
What?
A smaller version of that, right? You know that G-Wagon is working on...
I'm about to blow your mind.
Okay, blow
my
mind.
They already have.
Not this Bronco Sport.
That's exactly what a smaller Bronco is.
No, it's not. It's not. It's got to be body on frame,
well,
low range.
The G-Wagon's not going to be like that.
It's got to be body on low range.
Because then just buy the Bronco.
Those 200,000 people that are buying them aren't buying Bronco Sports. They're not buying the CRV.
It's already small. The two-door Bronco's already tiny.
The Trail Sport. They want a serious Jimny-like. This is a huge hole in the marketplace. Ford exploited it with the Maverick when they came out with, let's call it a compact Bronco. Call it that. Not a Bronco Sport.
Some would call it a Bronco Sport.
I would call it a compact Wrangler.
Well, if they ever do that, I would be amazed. But guys, let us know what you think in the comment section below.
Now you're the grumpy old man.
Yes, because you're speaking crazy stuff over here. Head on over to AltTFL. We got more videos for you coming soon.
Yep, we'll see you next time. Ciao.
This episode sponsored by IPVanish. IPVanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio. And take control of your privacy with IPVanish. This episode sponsored by IPVanish. IPVanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio. And take control of your privacy with IPVanish.